Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. I'm your host Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebold, and we are going to reflect on, but not completely break down, the 2018 NFL Draft, because Jeff, we've already done a couple of shows looking back on the draft on Sky Sports, which were a lot of fun, so we'll probably just pick out some of the big talking points, but of course, all eyes in terms of the NFL were on Dallas for 3 days.
Yeah, you know what? And a lot of those eyes, Neil, were from the UK. I thought that the interaction with the fans that we had on Twitter, the reaction to the show, the fact that you have, you know, I mean, the guys that were on the show, Solomon, Peter King, you know, it was awesome to have that kind of coverage of the draft. And it's just, again, as we always say, it's another step in the process. Because you can tell that the fans in the UK truly do know football and care about the draft and see the draft as a viable, not just entertainment, but as a real part of growing your football team.
Jeff, it feels like so much has happened in the last week with the draft that I suddenly remember we haven't really spoken about Shad Khan potentially bidding or making a bid for Wembley Stadium. So your thoughts on that? That news broke on draft day and... You know, again, I went on Sky Sports News in the afternoon. I feel like that was one of those milestones. I think it's one of those milestones, one of those markers in the ground that we'll look at in 3 or 4 years' time and say that made a real difference in terms of us getting a franchise. There's still many steps to go for him to actually buy Wembley Stadium and, of course, a large number of steps before the Jags or any other franchise moves to London. You have to have... relocation fees get paid. You have to be having the approval of 24 of the 32 owners. But I felt like it was a big step. What did you think looking at it from that side of the pond?
I agree with you 100%, Neil. And I think that the reaction, again, over here, the reaction across the board over here was, here we go. Mm. It's like, this is, as you said, another milestone. This is another step in that direction. I think that people here now recognize every time one of these things happens that it is closer and closer to the reality of having a franchise in London.
Now, we had the two games that are being played at Wembley Stadium. The single game tickets went on sale this week. The Jacksonville-Philadelphia game sold out very quickly. Just a handful of tickets left for the Chargers and the Titans. If you look at social media, then not all fans, of course, are happy with not being able to secure tickets. They had some issues in their mind with regard to tickets, with how the process took place. So I was able to take some time to speak to NFL UK Managing Director Alistair Kirkwood and put some of the fans' concerns and issues to him. Here's some of our chat between myself and Alistair. Okay, joined by Alistair Kirkwood, Managing Director of NFL UK. So, Alistair, the Wembley single game ticket sales went ahead this week. Clearly, some fans frustrated at not getting tickets. That's, I guess, a given. But we've had a number of tweets and messages with fans frustrated about tickets appearing very quickly afterwards on resale sites. So maybe your sort of thoughts on that.
So how long have you been doing Inside the Huddle podcast?
How long?
Yeah.
For years and years, Alistair.
Okay, so I just want to point out to all your loyal listeners that this is the first time you've invited me on to Inside the Huddle podcast.
I know, it's a good thing, right?
you're spinning this as a good thing.
Yeah, well, right? Clearly I felt you needed to come on and be a guest.
Good.
I mean, let me just give a couple of names out, shout outs to people that have mentioned the resale of tickets. Paul Barnes said, why are tickets arriving on a third party site at five times the cost? Nathan Griff says, will NFL UK investigate the ticket sales? Ticketmaster services failing? And then tickets appearing within just minutes on other sites.
Right, so I think what I would say is, first of all, I'd clarify that what we do is we put in all the tickets that we put on sale are tickets that we run through the publicised processes, mm-hmm. right? So when we go out with season tickets or two game packs, every ticket is made available. We don't hold any back for any resale purposes. We do not have any contractual agreements with any secondary sites.
Right.
We spent a lot of time over the last few years specifically not doing that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is secondary reselling is not illegal within the UK, right? So so we don't have the law as such that to kind of help us as kind of a backup. So our process is that we go on sale in... this time around, we went on sale with two game packs in February, or just after Super Bowl. Mm. Then we've just gone on sale with individual game tickets, the number of which we get known. We end up knowing what the volume is based on, first of all, how the two game packs go.
Yep.
We also have to secure a number of tickets for season ticket holders for the two participating teams back in the States, which is capped at a number as well. We don't physically distribute tickets to anybody till September.
Right.
So when we put them out on sale and someone is successful in buying tickets, the only control mechanism that we put in is the number of tickets you can buy in a transaction. If Neil Reynolds, so I'm naming you in this.
Yeah.
If Neil Reynolds goes on and chooses to buy a couple of tickets and then automatically puts that on those two tickets onto any other secondary website, first of all, there's nothing legally to stop you from doing that.
Right.
Morally might be a different question, but legally there's nothing. Secondly, no one knows for certain whether Neil Reynolds actually bought those two tickets or is speculatively just selling it for whatever he can get and then going to find out how he can get the tickets afterwards, because we don't print the tickets till September. So the first thing that I want to kind of clarify is that there's actually a limit to what we can actually do to control what somebody as a user would actually do, because it's not against the law.
Right.
And secondly, there are no real controls over it. That being said, when we did the two game packs, there were a number of things that we did in terms of auditing where we saw some suspicious buying patterns, and somewhere in the region of 2,000 to 3,000 tickets we stopped and put that back into the system. I won't go into detail.
So without, yeah, you can't go into the detail without tipping your hand as to,
yeah, I can't say the types of things that we check for.
But you tackle the touts.
Yeah, but by, if I actually give you any detail about
sure.
it, the touts will always be one, two, three steps ahead of
yeah.
us. So if I tell you exactly what we do, then that kind of defeats the purpose of it.
But you put that number of tickets, 2,000 to 3,000 tickets, back in the pot for fans when the belief was they had been bought by touts to sell illegally or to sell.
Yeah, there were some very suspicious buying patterns.
Right.
Let's call it that way.
Yeah.
We then sent emails to the folks involved, asked them to prove that they weren't touts, and there were a handful of people that where our suspicions were unproven and they were legitimate.
Yep.
But there were a lot of people that were just buying. As such, now I'm being a little bit two-faced, because I was about to say we don't make those kind of efforts public, and here's me actually now saying on
right.
the podcast.
Yeah.
But the reason why we don't go make a big thing about what we try and do is because you actually want to, by its very nature, be relatively undercover,
yeah.
and try and be and learn as much as possible to ensure that you can limit it. What we can't stop is Neil Reynolds buying two tickets and then Neil Reynolds deciding to do something with that.
Yeah.
we don't have an arrangement with any reseller or any website. We don't make money from that. It's not actually in our interests. For it to happen.
Sorry to interrupt you, which is where the optics of this might lead fans to believe that's the case, because they look at Ticketmaster and then some of the reselling websites are owned by Ticketmaster. Fans may put two and two together and come up with six, but you're saying the NFL does have no deal in place.
And other websites not owned by Ticketmaster also take place as well.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that I think can be done from a legal perspective. What we can just keep doing is being smarter in terms of spotting things that are suspicious.
Mm.
Now, I've seen ideas and thoughts out there in terms of, could you introduce more controls like photo IDs and other things?
Yeah, a number of those were suggested.
And they're all good ideas. They're a lot more difficult to put in place than it sounds, first of all. But also, when I go back to game day, we have so many challenges with even things like clear bag policy. It doesn't matter how many emails you send out, how you communicate it, how many text messages we send, there will always be people that didn't get the message about a clear bag policy.
Right.
And then you get frustration at the times of people walking in the stadium because they're then being told that they can't come in with their bags.
Right.
And for those individuals, that's a terrible experience. And yet, for the vast majority of people, they've compliant, they've understood what we're trying to do.
Mm.
But for those people, it's a terrible experience. So the more controls you put in place, such as photo IDs, you're also challenged with how does that actually work in practice. So, for example, Neil Reynolds buys two tickets legitimately, doesn't go to the game, gives it to a couple of friends. In that scenario, is it... What's the process? Does Neil Reynolds then have to inform the NFL as to who's coming? Do they have to then send photos in place? Or if that doesn't take place, are they not allowed into the game? So I think without trying to sound condescending, when people throw out ideas, you've got to think the whole way through, not just in terms of how do you actually make the ticket process as fair as possible, but how does it actually then end up on game day?
Right.
And are you actually creating more problems
and
potentially more issues and more customer dissatisfaction?
Neil Reynolds could drive 4 hours to the game and leave his driving license at home, and then how do I get into the stadium?
Right, and you bought a ticket and everything else. Now, some people will say, well, that's what you were told.
Right.
And that's fine, but again, if your lens is, how do you try and be as fair and equitable to everybody and come up with a system that's completely transparent? Then it's not without its challenges.
Mm. There's lots of ideas and lots of feedback from the fans, Alistair.
And that's all good.
Yeah.
I also don't want to come across as too defensive as we thought it all through. We will absolutely go through all the ideas and, based on everything else that we know, see if there are refinements that can be made. Because what I'm not saying is that the system is absolutely perfect.
Mm.
But on the other side, truth of the matter is that we have substantially more demand than we have supply.
Yeah.
And from a league perspective, that, and a headline perspective, that's really nice.
Yeah.
From a micro level, and we've all been in this situation, not just NFL fans, there are loads of events that you want to go to that are actually then sold out.
You can't get there,
And you can't get there. So I understand fully and appreciate the frustration.
Mm.
And we will, I give a commitment that we will evaluate all the ideas that are out there. Just don't get too frustrated with us if we don't always take them on board, because there are going to be they're knock-on effects and there are other considerations as well.
Well, Paul Stoddart asks, is there a quick fix to the ticketing issue? Obviously, that's, just talking it through, there's no quick fix. But David Place asks, would you consider a loyalty system for fans who have attended past games? I mean, again, at top level, sounds like a good idea to have a loyalty system, but I guess, I mean, just reading that, I don't know how that's implemented.
Yeah, I think one of the, again, having been on this rodeo a few times, you've got a situation where we do multiple games and we have favoured people that commit to multiple games. Now, if you're further away in the UK, in Belfast, or the Highlands of Scotland, it's not feasible or necessarily fair to expect you to come to every game, particularly when we're actually doing back-to-back games, like we're doing just now. So I understand that there are people that get miffed because they may be as loyal and ardent and avid of an NFL fan as anyone else, but logistics create challenges. There's also examples where when we've tried to institute ways of favouring season ticket holders, we'll get inundated with people's emails going, it's my sister's wedding last year, and it meant that I couldn't go to one game.
Right.
Therefore, it didn't make sense for me to have a season ticket in place. Yeah. But why do you actually think that I'm not as good an NFL fan as the next person? And again, it becomes much more difficult when you hear all of the anecdotal pushbacks that you get to work out a way where you can actually find an opportunity to get everybody in place. I love the idea of a loyalty system that's in place. The mechanics may be a challenge, and also the how you actually define loyalty. Right. So, somebody that subscribes to Game Pass, you might say, is more loyal than someone that doesn't. But if they live in the country and don't have great Wi-Fi connection. Then does that?
There's no point in them having it,
right?
So how do you
someone that goes to multiple games?
Yeah,
you know, are you favouring people from London and the South East more than other parts of the country? So I don't quite know how we get it to a place where everybody that wants to go to a game and feels that they have played a substantial part in making the sport as popular as it's become can get rewarded, yet at the same time. Do it in a way where it's completely transparent and favours everybody.
Do you think it's something you will try and look at, or the NFL?
Oh, absolutely. It sounds glib, but every single game and every single year, you use these opportunities to keep reevaluating what you're doing, how you're doing it. When we make it more complicated for ourselves because we play in multiple stadia. This year, we're playing in a stadium that's still not fully built as well, so there's ambiguity in that situation. And also ambiguity as to when we're actually going on sale for those games as well. So it's not the same as, I don't know, the Green Bay Packers or the Chicago Bears, where you know who the team is. When you go out on sale with season tickets, you don't know the dates, but you know the eight games that you're going to against opponents, so you can commit to at least a 3.5 month period and say, "I'll buy my season tickets." In the States, you've got the right of reselling your season tickets if you want as well. So, so therefore, there's a function that's there. You know exactly how many games are there. Whereas with us, because we've been growing this, you can't be absolutely clear as to how many games have been played each year. Where they're going to get played, what time the kickoffs are going to be.
You don't know that information until very late in the process sometimes.
And so if you actually look through all the variables, it becomes much more difficult to work out how do you make it work seamlessly for everybody. But my commitment is that we will continue to evaluate as long as everybody, hopefully by opening Pandora's box a little bit, on this podcast, you get an understanding that there's a lot more that goes into it than, you know, Tuesday 10 a.m. sale.
I think you've done that with, you know, talking about the Ticketmaster relationship and deal there, and you know, also the fact that you have been doing things over the years, even if it's not been publicized, to tackle touts. We had a lot of questions, Alistair, dozens and dozens of questions about the tickets, but few people wanted to get questions on a couple of other subjects. I'll just pick one out because it's relevant to what we've just seen in Dallas. It comes from Ian DeHalla, who says, do you think we'll ever see the draft come to London? It feels like when we... I mean, I'll let you answer in a second, but we are seen almost as another NFL market, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Like a LA or like a Cleveland, like a Miami. What do you think?
Personally, I'm on record as saying that I don't think we will have a draft or a Super Bowl until such time as, if ever, we have a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I think first of all, you've got to look and respect all the other markets that are out there in the US.
Yeah.
There are a whole load of relatively cold weather cities that get the draft that would find it difficult to get a Super Bowl, for example. So if you look at Chicago and Philadelphia, they're locations where it might be challenging to get Super Bowls.
Yep.
And therefore, you've got to absolutely respect that Denver and other places would be on that list. And it would be difficult, I think, to justify lobbying really hard for something over and above those locations that have had loyal fan bases and teams for a lot longer than we've been operating. I think Super Bowl, I know you didn't ask it, but I'm just going off on it. Super Bowl is similar in terms of scope, logistically, as challenging, if not more challenging, late Sunday nights. Both would be huge and be brilliant for us, but you got to be sympathetic and empathetic to the US fan bases.
Yep.
Now, if we were ever in a situation where there was an NFL team, then we would be the same as every other
market. You're in the conversation then.
And then you're lobbying as equals. Whereas I think what we're currently doing, which is trying to get regular season games. I remember, if I use this as a disclosure, a full disclosure thing, my most awkward conversation, I think, ever with a commissioner. That's a long list of...
been a few of them, aren't there?
Before we were playing the London Series games, I threw out to Paul Tagliabue, who was a brilliant commissioner, but I threw out to Paul Tagliabue, why don't we play a wild card game?
Okay.
Right. But should that not be the end game? If we could get regular season games up and running in the future, why don't we get a wild card game if you could do the number 4 or 5 seed somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
And if you announce it way ahead in advance, and therefore it wasn't seen as competitively disadvantaged, how huge would that be?
Yeah.
And I probably rambled on for longer than I did in trying to explain it to you, and he just gave me a swithering look that just told me to shut up without saying anything. It was just like,
no,
don't get carried away.
I would have liked to have seen that process carried out and then you to make the phone call to Bill Belichick to say, you know that home field advantage you've got at Foxborough? You're coming to London.
Yeah, but you see, I like the idea of being able to say a year in advance, if you finish number 4 seed, you don't get the home field advantage.
Yeah. Yeah,
Because at least if you're transparent about
it, you know it's a path.
And then it'd be like, I wouldn't be brave enough to say this, but it'd be like, Bill, you should have been a top 3 seed, right?
There you go. So we're trying for Alistair. Yeah. Sorry, you got anything else?
No, I was just going to say. So I just use that as an anecdote of there will be times where we'll push the envelope, and sometimes there'll be things where we'll say very fanciful things that may actually even put jobs at jeopardy for being seen as being stupid, but when it comes down to it, things like the draft and also the Super Bowl, I think is so core to the domestic fan base over in the States that we shouldn't be lobbying for it.
Alistair, thanks for joining us on Inside the Huddle. We won't leave it so long next time.
Oh, well, I know I'll be in trouble then.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks a lot, Neil.
All right, Jeff. So let's move on, Jeff, and let's talk about the draft. And I just want to look at certain headlines and talking points, really, because I know we've already had a couple of opportunities to discuss this. When we did our show, we recorded our complete wrap-up show Tuesday at Sky Sports. We had Peter King on in the first half, and one of the things that Peter talked about was the decision-making process in Cleveland, which led to them taking Baker Mayfield first overall and Denzel Ward 4th overall, and it was very, very interesting to me, Jeff, that Peter talked about John Dorsey, he talked about Elliot Wolf, he talked about Alonzo Highsmith, the former NFL running back who's now a personnel man, and he talked about Scott McLuhan as a consultant. There was no mention of Hugh Jackson. I think this is very, very firmly John Dorsey's team, isn't it, in terms of building a roster?
I agree with you, Neil. I think that you know, those guys have all been together a great deal of time. There's a lot of confidence that they have in one another's opinion. They've worked together. They've drafted players together. I think in a lot of ways, Hugh is kind of the odd man out here. I think that part of what John Dorsey got when he took that job from Jimmy Haslam was a mandate to fix it and do what you have to do to fix it. And I think he was given basically all the power to handle it the way he wanted to handle it. And I think that's, again, why Hugh was just on the sidelines. And again, you look at the long-term impact of what that could mean. If I'm Hugh Jackson, I'm feeling like I got to win 6 or 8 or I may be, you know, out of here.
Jeff, when you look at the Browns, they got Baker Mayfield number 1 and Denzel Ward 4. Do you think they could have got Saquon Barkley at 1 and Mayfield at 4? I guess we're one of those that we'll never know, but you were a big Barkley fan. I know, the running back out of Penn State.
Yeah, I just don't believe, and again, I will go to my grave saying this, I just don't believe you pass on the best player in the draft unless you feel like Baker Mayfield is so far above all the other quarterbacks. Now, he separated himself, Neil, I think, not on film evaluation, not on anything he did at the physically did at the Senior Bowl. I think that kid separated himself from those other quarterbacks with his presence. When he came in on his visits, from everybody that I've talked to that was around him, said the kid just took over the room. And not took over the room selfish kind of way. He just had a presence that made people say he's the guy.
Jeff, when you look at, I've got a list of quarterbacks here. Obviously, 5 quarterbacks were taken in round 1, first time since 1999. But we've talked about succession plans quite a few times on Inside the Huddle. And I look at Drew Brees, is 39. These are all ages at the start of the 2018 season. Drew Brees will be 39. Eli Manning will be 37, Philip Rivers 36, Big Ben 36, Tom Brady 41. None of those teams took a quarterback in the first round. So the Giants took Kyle Laletta in the 5th round. The Steelers took Mason Rudolph in the 3rd round. And Big Ben has already said the Mason Rudolph era is not going to begin for another 3 to 5 years. New England didn't roll the dice until they got Danny Etling in the 7th round. Jeff, when you've got a big-name franchise quarterback in situ, is this an example that it's just not worth rocking the boat? Because there was a chance for the Giants, for sure, to go and grab a quarterback, wasn't there? We thought Lamar Jackson might have been heading to New Orleans, but all of these teams chose not to put a high-profile succession plan in place. What do you think?
I think it, more than anything else, Neil, is indicative of the attitude that's prevalent in the National Football League right now, and that it is a what have you done for me lately. The succession plan is probably going to be the next guy's, you know, going to be coaching them, not you. The next guy's going to be there'll be a new general manager. If you don't win, you're out the door. I mean, you look at today how many times guys are in and gone. I mean, McAdoo makes it a season and he goes to playoff and makes it a season and a half. It's crazy the way it is now with GMs and head coaches and assistant coaches being let go. In the past, in the old NFL, you were pretty much guaranteed 3 years in a program. And if you hadn't shown progress in 3 years, then you were shown the door. Now, it's 3 months. If these owners are so trigger happy now, and it's so expensive, and it's so high profile, that you know, it's really tough. I listened to a phenomenal discussion the other day between two scouts, between two guys who are now in the media but had been scouts, and it was really interesting, Neil. There's two schools of thought. The coaches typically don't want to play a player too early, and the personnel guys typically want to get him on the field right away. And that is really, really an interesting struggle that's going to take place in an awful lot of rooms in the National Football League between personnel and coaching. And it's all part of that process. Because you draft them, the personnel guys want to get them on the field. Mm. And the owner wants to see what his new high-priced toy looks like. So, you know, it's that deal.
Jeff, it was interesting, again, sticking with quarterbacks, and Brady will be 41 going into the new season. It's him and Brian Hoyer. That's the way it is for the New England Patriots as they go into 2018. And, of course, Tom Brady is more than enough to get the job done. But he was interviewed this week by Jim Gray, and he was asked if he feels he's truly appreciated by the Patriots and, you know, they show the right gratitude for what he's done for that franchise. Jeff, his answer was, "I plead the fifth." And he was kind of half joking, but he didn't follow it up by saying, "Yeah, of course I'm appreciated." There's all these rumblings behind the scenes with Gronkowski telling Danny Amendola, you know, be happy, be free when he gets out of New England. Gronk flirting with retirement. Brady and Belichick. I mean, it's all kind of there rumbling behind the scenes, isn't it? I think it's real, this. What do you think?
Well, you know what? I was really surprised. As savvy as Tom is in the media, as good as he is, as much as he understands how it works, that comment, Neil, can be taken in so many ways and so many of them negatively that if he does, I mean, he put that out there. I mean, how many times have you seen him slip up in the media?
No, he doesn't. Jeff, he even controls his own press conference to the point where he'll say, I'll take two more questions, then I'm done. Normally, you've got a PR guy that does that. He is arguably the most PR-savvy player in the entire NFL.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So for Tom to say that, then again, and I'm the last guy to get on that speculation train, you know, where, oh my God, it's falling apart in New England. Mm. But I do think that there's been enough now where there are little cracks in the fortress. And this is a little crack in the fortress, I think. And I'm sure there is some, you know, and people have to understand, too, these are all alpha males. These are all big ego guys. These are all guys that you know, it's hard to keep everybody feeling like they're loved and appreciated, you know, when you're trying to do that with, you know, a bunch of egos and a bunch of personalities.
Jeff, if he's waiting for Bill Belichick to change his ways, though, he's going to have a long wait. He'll be long retired before that happens. And also, you know, he addressed the Malcolm Butler issue in the same interview. If he's waiting for an explanation from Bill Belichick on why Malcolm Butler was benched during Super Bowl 52, again, he's going to have a big, long grey beard and he's going to be sitting in a rocking chair when he gets the answer. Belichick's not changing his ways, is he, Jeff, no matter what goes on behind the scenes?
Nope, you are exactly correct, my friend. He is who he is, and he's going to do it his way, and his way has won. I think, Neil, that you know, there's a saying in our business that winning cures everything.
Yeah.
And that is really, really true. You know, what's going on there is no different than what goes on in 32 other franchises. It's just that it gets masked over particularly well when you win, and secondly, when you control the media as well as New England controls the media.
Is it an environment that can wear on a player, though, Jeff? We had Ross Tucker.
Ross Tucker
joined us, didn't he, at the Super Bowl, and he said that they coach by highlighting your bad points.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you that I have a player who was drafted there and played there, and he hated every minute of it because... And to the point where, Neil, to the point where he was actually thought about giving up football, and just because of the pressure and the expectation this kid was not a wallflower. This kid was not a soft kid. He wasn't mentally soft. He was just,
right.
It was so difficult on him, and he did not enjoy football. And so he went from, and again, you got to understand where he's going from. He's going from playing for June Jones and the way June does everything. And then all of a sudden he goes to Bill Belichick, and it's a whole different deal. And it was tough on him mentally. I remember seeing him at the end of his rookie season. I watched him when the Texans and the Patriots played, and I talked to him after the game. And he looked like he was absolutely worn out. He was emotionally just beaten up by the end of the season.
Jeff, when we look at the five rookie quarterbacks taken in round one, it doesn't always pan out. The guy at the top is the best, and the guy taken 32nd is going to be the worst of those five. Which of those do you see settling into a starting role the quickest and being the most comfortable as a rookie?
All right, now this is to me really a great talking point, because you look at the situations, right? Sam Darnold's 20 years old, Neil.
Yeah.
20, right? Now, he played at USC, yeah. And it's interesting when I hear everybody talk about how pro-ready he is, they must not have watched some of the film that I watched, because he has been a turnover machine. He's fumbled the ball. He's thrown interceptions at critical times. He is a long way, in my opinion, from being ready to play the game. And so you look at that and you say, I think probably Josh Rosen, one of the reasons being Sam Bradford's so brittle. So he may have to play earlier because Sam can't stay healthy. That's been his history. He's probably the most ready, but I'm going to tell you, Neil, as I went through my study of him and I talked to guys, and then all of a sudden I started watching interviews of him, I liked him less and less and less every time he opened his mouth. And he's got some work to do, and he's going to have to show his teammates that, that he's a pro.
Jeff, that is really interesting, because if you read a lot of the stories, and I was reading a lot of stuff about Josh Rosen, I was of the opinion that he's being harshly treated, and he should be judged on what he does on the field. And then I started watching actual videos. I get exactly what you're saying. I mean, and also the facial, he's the new Jay Cutler, Jeff. I mean,
That's the best. That's the best description I've ever heard. I'll do that, because you're exactly right. He won't look you in the eye. He's got that kind of like, I'm smarter than you. I can just see how that rubs people so wrong. And then you talk up, the thing about having a hot tub in his room, and I mean, just it's stuff that. He just
doesn't come across very well.
No, and then he stands up at the draft and says there were 9 mistakes in front of him. So you're telling me Saquon Barkley's a mistake?
Yeah, and San Francisco, we're going to take a quarterback when they just made Jimmy Garoppolo the highest paid player in NFL history?
Yeah,
he did correct that later on.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what I'm saying, though. He corrected it. Why? When? When his agent got him, and all this,
after the PR guy got him,
they said, "Josh, you can't talk like that." Da, da, da. Well, then I hear him the next day, and he's still, so what? There's 3 guys. The quarterbacks are all mistakes. Listen to Saquon Barkley's interviews, and listen to Josh Rosen's interviews, and that's what I'm talking about. That's the difference between the guy you want to be the face of your franchise and the guy that you just go, "Oh my gosh, here we go."
Jeff, let's go.
I'm going to make a bold statement, Neil. I'm saying that at least 3 of these quarterbacks are going to be busts. At least, and maybe 4.
Wow. Do you want to put names to any of them?
Well, I think that...
Who are you most worried about? Let's put it that way.
Well, I think there's a couple guys that scare me the most. Obviously, Rosen scares me the most because he reminds me of Ryan Leaf coming out of college.
Yep.
Now, I don't know anything about his personal life because... Ryan had some demons, but Ryan had that chip on the shoulder, everybody's picking on me, that whole arrogant thing, right?
Yep.
So that's not going to wear well. Even in the desert, that's not going to wear well. And so I think he's one that has a chance. I think he could also be a great big star, right? It's just going to come down to how he handles it, and how he's managed. I think the kid at the Wyoming kid, Neil, when you research a quarterback all the way back to his high school days, and he can't throw for 60% completions at any level of football, and you're going to play in the National Football League, that scares me, because the thing that coaches, quarterback coaches, everyone I've ever been around says, the 2 things that they want more than anything else are decision making and accuracy. And those are things that are not items that you're going to stick next to that kid's name when you talk about his strengths and his weaknesses. So there's two, and I think that Lamar Jackson is a boom or bust guy.
Yeah,
I think he's. You know, here's the deal. If we were going down to the park in Central London, and we're going to play a pickup game just based on his tape, and you had Baker Mayfield, you had him, you had Rob Rosen, you had all of them there, and you get to pick a quarterback for your flag team, you take him because he makes more plays, right?
Right.
I mean, the guy's unbelievable on tape. But the game's not played like that, right? And his throwing mechanics are a little bit wonky. He can sail balls. He'll make plays, but you're talking about there's an awful lot that's got to get not coached out of him, but they're going to have to do an awful lot a la Michael Vick to fit an offense to him.
Before you think that Jeff is being too negative, NFL history suggests he's absolutely bang on the money in terms of hits and misses with quarterbacks in round one. Let's just go back to the 1999 draft, because as I said, this was the first time five quarterbacks were taken in round one since 1999. Here are the five that went in 99. Tim Couch to Cleveland, bust. Donovan McNabb to Philadelphia, yes, very nice career. Dante Culpepper to Minnesota, not a bad start, then a bust. Cade McNown to the Chicago Bears, bust. I mean, Jeff, I'm missing one somewhere. I've missed one out. And Achilles Smith, of course. Achilles Smith to Cincinnati, last seen stinking it up in NFL Europe, bust. So, Jeff, you're right. You're absolutely bang on. Not every quarterback pans out. That's the nature of the position. That's the nature of the draft.
Neil, two things I wanted to get into the show yesterday. I'm going to put them out there today for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. In the Hall of Fame, in the NFL Hall of Fame, there are more undrafted free agents than there are first-round draft picks.
That is incredible.
16, there are 16 undrafted free agents in the NFL Hall of Fame, 14 first-round draft picks. All right? That's my first one. And talking about Baker Mayfield, and you know me, I'm 5'9", right? So I don't get all excited about height. Right? But
you can't, Jeff. Sorry to break it to you.
But again, talking about the tall quarterbacks, right? One of the knocks on Mayfield was he's 6'1". Right? I went back and checked. How many Super Bowls have we had, Neil?
52.
52 Super Bowls. Only five have been won by quarterbacks 6'1 or shorter. Right? Wow. Only five of 52. Bart Starr, 6'1". Wilson's 5'11", Drew Brees is 6 foot, and Lenny Dawson's 6 foot. All right, so you look at that, and Bostar won 2, Wilson won 1, Brees won 1, and Dawson won 1, and that's it. That's all the 6'1 and shorter quarterbacks in the history of the Super Bowl.
Love it. I love a stat, Jeff. You know I do. That's a good one. That is a really good one. I tell you, with Baker Mayfield as well, Jeff, and you know, this isn't X's and O's, and this isn't what he's going to do on the field, but fans and fans' expectations have an impact on how much rope a player is given, how much leeway a player is given, how much time he's given before the beer bottles are thrown and the booze start raining down. Baker Mayfield is going to have to live with the fact that Browns fans are going to be always having one eye looking over and seeing what Carson Wentz does. One eye looking and seeing what Deshaun Watson does. And now I'm giving Browns fans three eyes because they're also going to look and see what Saquon Barkley is doing. That's just the nature of fans. And it's going to put pressure on Baker Mayfield.
Exactly, because here's the deal now. Not only Saquon Barkley, Neil, they're going to look at how Josh Rosen's doing.
Yep.
And they're going to look at Sam Darnold.
Yep.
And they're going to look at Josh Allen. And they're going to look at all of them. And then they're going to also look at, let's say Kyle LaLeta at the Giants turns out to be what some people think he can be, which is the next quarterback in New York, and he has success, and you got him in the fourth round, and we took this guy with the first. I mean, this is the enormity of being drafted number one, and secondly, the enormity. And Trent Dilfer, when you and I talked to Trent Dilfer, what did he say? They don't get the enormity of playing quarterback in the National Football League.
Yeah. So much that goes into it, right? Everything. Like you said, all the stuff that we're talking about with Rosen, it all factors in.
Every bit of it. Now, talk Josh Allen. That stuff that came out hours before the draft.
Yeah.
Do you realize what that kid's going to have to go through and how he's going to have to work to to. I mean, here's the reality.
Just in the locker room, Jeff.
70-some percent of the NFL's African American. Mm. And those comments are going to resonate not only in your locker room, but throughout the league. Right? Throughout the league. And so he's not only got to win his locker, he's got to win the respect of his peers around the league, right? The guys that he's competing against. And you know, I mean, that is a big deal. And I don't care how they mask it, it is a big deal.
Jeff, who had the... It's so hard to do. We probably should remember. You know what I'm going to ask you? Who had a really good draft and who won the draft?
I'm going to ask you the exact same question.
I have no idea. I mean, give me 3 years and I'll tell you. But I do like what, you know, obviously they're going to make all the right noises afterwards, but Dave Gettleman and the New York Giants seem to have a very good draft in terms of being able to pick up, you know, a big offensive lineman as well as Saquon Barkley. They get a big defensive tackle, they get a linebacker. And I kind of like the fact that he was quite bullish about the fact that nobody came up and offered me enough at number two, so I took the best player there. And you know, I feel like that was a reaffirmation of the fact they're behind Eli Manning as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what I agree, Neil. And so the draft now has more implications. You know, I'm talking about the success of your draft. Let's say we're talking about Gettleman and the Giants. I love his draft. I love it, right? I mean, you get Barkley, you get a big, strong, tough guy in Hernandez. It's going to make your football team tougher and better. You get two impact defensive linemen in the third. And then you come back with a possible succession at quarterback in Kyle Lavette. I'm going to tell you, watch that kid on tape. He's got a lot of ability. Mm. Well, you look at that and say, that's great. That's all. But you know what? Eli can't play at a high level. Then it ain't such a great draft. You see how it all impacts. It's not only the guys you pick, it's how you pick and why you pick that guy, because you're banking on what? What do you think the Giants are banking on? That 37-year-old quarterback who didn't look very good last year
is going to be
actually still play.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, put it all on that. Jeff, just a couple of other things I just want to touch on as we finish off. Not going to take any mailbag questions today because I've got a lot of questions from the fans that we put to Alistair Kirkwood earlier in our podcast here, but Jordan Mailata, the offensive tackle from Australia, he was taken in the 7th round, 6'8", 346 pounds, and Philly really liked him, Jeff. They traded up 17 spots to go and get him.
You know what? I thought that was going to happen, Neil, because I got a call from an NFL guy 3 days before the draft, and he said, hey, have you seen that offensive lineman from Australia?
Yeah.
And they were talking about Jordan. And he said, I have never, and this is a big statement, but he said, I have never seen a man that big, that athletic.
Yeah.
And he's been in the NFL probably 25 years. And he said, I've never seen a man that big, that athletic. And, you know, I thought I really was disappointed with Mike Mayock for one thing he said during the draft, and it was kind of a smart, smart ass comment on the air, where he said, I talked to Mike Zimmer and I told him, don't draft any more Germans. And I thought that was a little bit of a cheap shot, because, I mean, there's a lot of Americans that have failed in the draft too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. So that was kind of a snarky comment that I didn't appreciate. I hope this kid comes in and lights it up and turns into a great player. And you know, but because again, they're out there, and the pathway program is you know, going to produce NFL players. You watch.
Let me just talk about, just to finish up, Jeff. The players have been named for the 2018 International Player Pathway Program. One of the guys you just alluded to there, Moritz Boehringer. Is back. He's going to be with the Cincinnati Bengals. He played in the German Football League, as we know. You've got Christopher Eziala, a fullback from Germany, 22 years old. He's going to the Baltimore Ravens. Played for the Ingolstadt Dukes in the GFL. Tigi Sanko, a defensive back from the Cleveland Browns. He's 21, Jeff. He started out with the Kent Exiles youth team. He went on to play for the London Warriors. He went to the Filton Academy in Bristol. He's going to the Cleveland Browns. And you've got Christian Scotland Williamson, a tight end, 24, professional rugby convert, who's going to the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I tell you where three of them are interesting, Jeff. They've come from the domestic leagues in their respective countries. what role models they're going to be for young players going forward.
Yeah, and you know what? As we go through this, and Neil, you and I have probably maybe as good a history on this whole thing as anybody, because we watched the program start. We watched it start to send players to the league, start to get guys on practice rosters, and then all of a sudden, you know, here we go. Mm. And now the Jay Ajayis are the vista that these young players aspire to see and do. Now, again, Aiden Durda goes to be a coach in the National Football League. It's all moving in a positive direction. Mm. And I think it's still fragile. I'm going to say this. I think it's still fragile. That's why I was so disappointed in Mayock's comment, because, you know, that you don't need to say that, no. Right? And then, but I do think that the kids out there, they're out there. We know they're out there, and they're getting better every day. It's interesting to see that the second best player in the history of the Kent Exiles is coming to the National Football League.
There you go. The first one isn't me. I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, that's who I was talking about. Skinny receiver from back in the day.
There you go. Hey, and just on Mike Mayo, there are certain reporters, Jeff, there are certain journalists that cover the NFL who think if it doesn't happen in America, it doesn't happen. But it's happening. And this game is growing. It's going global.
Well, that's just, you know, again, when he made the comment, I said that's unfortunate, because I like Mike, right?
Yeah.
And I've known Mike a long time, and I think he does a great job at the draft. But I just thought, you know, Mike, you don't have to say that. And it's a cheap shot you don't need.
All right, we are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. We are going to be back next week, and we're going to pick up our state of the franchise. I will by then have checked who we are up to. I know we owe the Cincinnati Bengals. We ended not doing the Bengals, so we will pick up with our state of the franchise next week. Until then, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
I'm not letting you off the hook. You got to tell me who had the worst draft in your eyes. Who had the worst draft?
Oh, probably the Dolphins. Probably the Dolphins, Jeff. What else do you expect me to say?
All right, wait a second. I'll see your Dolphins and raise you one. I'm the Raiders.
I
don't know what we're doing.
No, in all seriousness, I'd say there were some head scratchers with the Raiders. I thought the Dolphins picked the right players at the right time in the draft. They probably wanted Josh Rosen. They didn't get them. I'm being chased out of this room, Jeff. We are officially out of time. Please say goodbye.
Aloha.